Next Step number 630, July 2nd, 2020.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Welcome to the next step. If this is your first time, I'm not talking about being here on the next step. I'm talking about we have all been here before and what we're seeing out there. Oh, I got an article from a friend about the Archbishop of Canterbury. Says that the portrayal of Jesus as white should be reconsidered. And I'm just reading this, and I said, this sounds familiar. Vaguely familiar. No, not even vaguely. This is just exactly a year ago. Exactly a year ago. You check it out. We spoke about this, about the images of Christ, about what Christ looks like is not about an actual rendering of what Christ looked like. It's a reflection of what we understand. What we understand in that image. What we understand by our faith. What we understand about God. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that whole thing. It's out there. I will put a link on today's show notes. So exactly a year ago was 2019. Yes, BC, before COVID, way before, exactly a year ago, June 2019, we spoke about the images of Christ. And today, people are waking up and saying, oh yeah, we have to change things. Well, one of the biggest things that we're hearing about is the doing away of statues that remind us of the past. Now, I spoke about this last week. It's interesting when you think about the opportunities that statues give you. The opportunities to talk about some of the, let's say, some of the more unpleasant things. Beyond unpleasant. Some of the horrific things that took place in history. Which are probably never going to get discovered, you know. Because don't forget that history belongs to the winner. It's the winner who writes the history, and you read that history through the vantage point of somebody who wrote it, right? Obviously. It's like I've shared with you that story about the two-man race, right? It's back in the Soviet times, when there was a Soviet Union. The American guy races the Soviet guy, and the American wins. And in our newspapers, we say the American won. Soviet Union writes the same article in Pravda, which is the truth. And what do they write? They write that the Americans came in second to last. Well, it's true. Yeah, it's true. They came in second to last. Right? The Soviets came in last. There's two men racing. Soviets came in last, so the American came in second to last. It's truth. It's truth. And equally as true is that the Soviets came in second. Yeah, they did. They came in second. Second place. Okay. So it's about the spin. It's about how you look at it. It's about how you share that information. And I mean, you know, you are a next stepper. We have all been here before. We've talked about this in terms of how we perceive our faith and what we understand about our faith and how you can take the information. You know, yesterday I sat in at a meeting where somebody made the point that if you want to get to the earliest Christianity, you want to get to the earliest, you got to go to the roots and you got to go to the first. The first place, apostolic. And what is the closest thing to apostolic times? And that is, of course, the Armenian Church. It is, it goes back, it has been unaltered, and it's there. The oldest community of believers, the first three ecumenical councils, that point was made too. So we haven't had a chance to shift and to change things and play the politics that we saw in the West and so on and so on. It was a wonderful presentation, I have to tell you. I mean, it was 15 minutes. It was given to the young people. And I thought it was done so brilliantly because it was just, it wasn't bulleted. It wasn't just like bullet points. It was actually, there was a flow to it. It was just really well done. Okay, so the point is made that here we are, the Armenians. We are this early Christian church. We have tradition, and our tradition, capital T tradition, is the one that hasn't changed from day one, apostolic times, and so on. Okay, that's wonderful. There's a church right down the street from me, an Armenian church, and over the altar area, it's written Takavor Yerknavor Zegetsiko Ansharbaya. Takavor Yerknavor, King of Heaven, Eternal King. Keep your holy church unshaken. Unshaken. And just because I happen to know the reason why they put that over there, it's just like we shouldn't move from tradition. You know, everything is tradition, and this is very important. I agree, yeah. Tradition is very important, a capital T tradition. And actually, I even go one step further, and I tell you that, and you've heard me say it, that, you know, we got to be careful. When you read the Bible, you've got to read the Bible in the understanding of that tradition. It's not meant for everybody to just grab it and say, okay, hey, I'm going to give you a rendering of it. And we'll talk about that too, because we're seeing that right now. We're seeing that here in America with the racism, with Black Lives Matter. We're seeing people that can justify just about anything from the pages of the Bible. Yeah. And you could read it and you could understand that you could understand and even justify racism. You could even justify slavery. Wow. That's why I tell you, you can't read this stuff literally. But no. We have to have Bible. We love that Bible, don't we? Okay. So I was listening to this speaker yesterday. He spoke about the tradition. Tradition cannot be, is the foundation, and it's there. Okay, I believe it. Fine. And he goes on to quote John Meyendorf. Now, you may have heard John Meyendorf was an Orthodox theologian, writer. And Armenians know about him probably because he taught at St. Vladimir's, which is connected academically with St. Nerses Seminary back east. Anyway, long story. He's written many, many volumes. But the speaker made a point to say that John Meyendorf has said that, you know, tradition has to be living. That tradition that we have, that we call the tradition, the church has to be living. Well, okay, think about it for a moment, right? Yes, we can say that tradition has to be grounded, should not be changed. Zegeetziko ansharbaya. Keep it unshaken. Okay? Yeah, we can understand that, right? But what does it mean when he says living? Living implies change. Any organism, I don't care what it is, that lives changes. Actually, you could even argue the dead organisms change, right? They decay. Dead organisms decay. But part of the definition of living is that it changes, it evolves, it picks up from its surroundings. And so we were talking a few minutes ago about history, right? Think about history. Well, it's really the information that the winner wants you to know about. A war is fought. Well, who's going to write it? And we Armenians know this very well, because if you go into Turkey and you go into their textbooks, and for the last 100 years since the Armenian Genocide, children who have grown up in Turkey have never heard about the Armenian Genocide. It has never been written about in their books. Well, of course. It's a huge embarrassment. I'm using the word embarrassment to put it. It's a huge crime, but it's an embarrassment for them to admit to that crime. So you're not going to write that in your history. And now we're seeing this play out on the streets of America. We have a history that is, yes, embarrassing. It includes slavery. And now there's a give and take. What does it mean? And I've heard you got to be here to hear these arguments back and forth. And here's the interesting thing. If you participate in these arguments, if you participate in sharing your ideas and your thoughts, you are ready to get it. You're going to get it because you're in for it. Unfortunately, we've lost the capacity to discuss. It's way beyond discussion now. It is black and white. This is the way it is. And so we have this opportunity of looking at some of these statues and saying, hey, you know, there's an opportunity to share a lesson. And I told you last week about my brother. It was brilliant, actually. He said, instead of us tearing down these statues, let's put signs up next to them. That yes, there was a time when, you know, there was slavery. There was a time when this mindset was there, because our example our example of this comes to us from the Germans. You go to Germany, there's Auschwitz, the death camp, right? Where the Jews were exterminated. Well, they didn't just come in and put, you know, level it off. They didn't plow it through and take bulldozers through it and say, okay, this is an embarrassment to us, let's get rid of Auschwitz. No, it's still standing there. And you go there and there's a message. And you go there and you learn. You go there and you see, you experience. And think about it. Okay, if there's an opportunity right now, this is it, an opportunity to learn. But by getting rid of these statues, what's happening is now we are writing a history in the way that we want to present it. Which is also a change, right? Which is also part of the evolutionary process. We are different today than we were 4 months ago. I think everybody agrees that this four-month period since the pandemic began has changed our world. And because the world has changed, and because we are components of the world, we have changed. The way we look, the way we talk about certain things, our tolerance levels, what we understand, how we perceive, how we shape our minds, how we deal with one another. Yeah. And you know what? I think we, at the very beginning of the pandemic, we were talking about when will it end so we get to a point of normalcy. And we're now understanding that normalcy is a very relative issue as well. Are you going to get to that normal period? If you think that you're going to get back to pre-pandemic conditions, no. It's not going to happen. You may get close to it. You may be something like it. But no. Just think about your own life. When's the last time you hugged anybody? When's the last time you spoke without a mask, up close and personal to somebody? When's the last time you shared a cup of coffee with a friend who is not, you know, somebody who's in your immediate circle? In other words, when you call a friend up and say, hey, let's go out for a cup of coffee. You can't do that. And that's just the easy stuff. That's just the easy stuff. We are going to hit the 4th of July weekend here in America. This is our Independence Day. This is the biggest celebration. And they're telling us that the beaches are going to be closed. Well, Southern California, where I'm broadcasting from, is the capital of beaches. You want to see beaches? Come out to our beaches. That's the Pacific Ocean, the southern coast of California. Well, it's not going to happen this year. What's that going to mean? How are people going to be dealing with it? They close the beaches, right? It's a change. As a priest, I know that how, let's see, I'd say about a handful of people so far, thus far, have changed their plans for weddings. And, I'm not talking about the cancellations. Change their plans, having smaller, tinier little weddings. I did one last week, which was beautiful, or a couple weeks ago. It was actually very, very nice. It was the bride and the groom, the parents, and the best man. That was it. They said next year we'll have the celebration, but they wanted to be married. They wanted to be able to say that they were married in the eyes of God, and they came to the church and were married. Okay, beautiful, right? And you know what? They're always going to remember that their wedding began in this unique situation. So you now have this opportunity. Last Sunday, our primate spoke at St. Peter Armenian Church in the Valley. It was the first time in 4 months that he had paid a pastoral visit. In other words, these are, as a bishop, you are overseer over several churches. And it was the first time that in 4 months since the pandemic that he had gone out to one of the churches to celebrate the liturgy. And in his talk, he spoke about the opportunity that this pandemic is giving us to reflect, to be contemplative, to meditate. And he likened it very much to Jesus going away 40 days in the wilderness. And it gives you an opportunity to think, to meditate, to look inward. And these 4 months have given us all a chance to, if at the very least, think about, well, more than think about, is to understand that life is more than the possessions that we have. You know, I always get asked, like, what's the worst thing out there? As a priest, what do you see? What's the worst thing? I think people want these, like, stock answers, and they want like quick bulleted answers. You know, they expect me to say, I think the worst thing is, you know, that we can't pray in school, or somebody else, you know, the worst thing out there is that abortion rights, for instance. You know, you know what to me is the worst thing that's out there? If we have one problem that we have to address and solve in our lifetime, it's materialism. I think that's what destroys families, it destroys people, it destroys egos, because the material wealth that we have, we've put it out of perspective. So we start understanding that these material objects that we have, the money that we have, the things, the stuff that we consume is a measure of who we are as people. And we've forgotten about the very basic understanding that As creations of God, we are people of spirit, not people of physical means and ability. And don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about like, okay, get out there and just lose all the money that you have and give me all your money. By the way, who was it? Oh, there was a guy, Kenneth Copeland. That's right. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, you know what? I wouldn't give him this publicity, but you've got to see this guy. It was like late at night. I'm surfing through the channels and I stumble on this guy. I say, this guy looks familiar. I've seen him speak before. Let's see what he's talking about. He was actually talking inside of the pandemic. He filled up his cheeks with air and then he blew into the camera. He says, I'm praying, God, blow away blow away this COVID-19. Then he said, now listen, he said, don't forget your tithing. Even if you've had a rough time, even if financially you've had a difficult time, don't forget our ministry. Don't forget your tithing. Call right now. Make sure that you are giving. I'm listening to this guy, and I'm ready for, you know, at the very least for somebody to yell out, hey, stop it. You know, people are hurting. At the very most, I'm waiting for a lightning bolt to come through the ceiling. But the nerve. And this is what I'm saying. We've lost the idea that we are spiritual beings. Instead, material wealth has overtaken us. And unfortunately, once it has, it makes you lose sight of what's important, what you can do in your life. I have a lot I want to talk about today. I hope you're with me. This morning, we had a discussion with a group of priests about the pandemic's effect on us and about the services. And you know what one of them talked about? They said that, well, maybe these streams are detrimental to us. And I thought to myself, whoa, it's the Happy Harry phenomena. And I even shared it with them. I told them a little bit about who Happy Harry was. It's remember I shared with you last week, it's the Happy Harry phenomena. It's the idea that now we're just putting on the stream of the divine liturgy, the sacredness of the divine liturgy, sitting around in our pajamas, maybe a cup of coffee, maybe a cigarette, and we're letting the background go with the divine liturgy. Yeah. We've forgotten that that divine liturgy had a message and a means by which it travels to us. We've talked about the holisticness of the divine liturgy requires us to be there, but we can't be there. And we get to the politics of it all, too. And that's where we'll break right now, okay? I'm going to come back because it also happens to be the 4th of July weekend. I want to share some ideas and some thoughts about quite a few different things. But for right now, our dear friend Gor Mkhitaryan wrote a beautiful piece. And he did this at the request of a few friends in Armenia, because in Armenia, the mask situation is a very difficult one. You want to see a small reflection of it? Take a look at Glendale, California. Do you know that here in the Los Angeles County area, Glendale, California has one of the largest number of COVID-19 infections? And it is inhabited by a lot of Armenians. I think 40% is Armenian. But sadly, I think 4 out of the 5 city council members are Armenian, and this is completely in the hands of politicians, and these politicians could care less because they're not out there doing anything. Yeah, they're politicians, right? Got to think about the vote. And if Armenians don't want to wear masks, got to think about that. Well, Gor Mkhitaryan wrote a beautiful piece about wearing the masks. And it was so beautiful that Nikol Pashinyan, yes, Prime Minister himself, reached out to him. He tweeted about Gor's song. And, I had a chance to hear it like a day or two before the Pashinyan tweet. And I'm just going, this is so beautiful. I mean, I'm partial. You want to know how partial I am? Last weekend, I had to drive out to Rancho Mirage, that's the Palm Springs area, to do services. Last Sunday morning, I did services there and drove back. It's a 2-hour drive there, 2-hour back. 4 hours, I listened to Gor Mkhitaryan. Oh, it was so good. I mean, like, it gave me a chance just being in the car alone, singing loud, but also to absorb some of the words that usually, you know, when you hear these songs, they kind of like go over your head. You forget about that there's a meaning in these words, too. Anyway, this is Gor's newest release. It is about being safe.
չոր, իսկ մենք կանոգ մի ծիծող մերժում ենք կարել վահան։ Տեսեմ մահվան դեմքն ամեն ուր ու հելի, մենք ամդ տարվեր օգնենք երկրին, մեր բժշկին, ինքներս մեզ ու հարևանին։ Պաշտպանիր քեզ, պաշտպանիր ինձ, միասին մենք կպաշտպանենք երկիրն, հայրենիքն է անտեսանելի թշնամուց։ Պաշտպանիր քեզ, պաշտպանիր ինձ, միասին մենք կպաշտպանենք երկիրն, հայրենիքն է նորագույն այս ժամտախտից։ Միացիր ինձ բարեկամ, դառնանք բռուց քաղաքական, հավատանք կամ չհավատանք, արդեն դրված է մի մեծ ական։ Հակիր զրահը տանուլ չտանք, փոքրաթիվ ենք սակայն համար, համավարակն այս դաժան փորձակար է անանձնական։ Պաշտպանիր քեզ, պաշտպանիր ինձ, միասին մենք կպաշտպանենք երկիրն ու հայրենիքը անտեսանելի թշնամուց։ Պաշտպանիր քեզ, պաշտպանիր ինձ, միասին մենք կպաշտպանենք երկիրն ու հայրենիքը նորագույն այս ժամտախտից։ Պաշտպանիր քեզ, պաշտպանիր ինձ, միասին մենք կպաշտպանենք երկիրն ու հայրենիքը անտեսանելի Պաշտպանիր քեզ, պաշտպանիր ինձ, միասին մենք կպաշտպանենք երկիրն ու հայրենիքը նորագույն այս ժամտախտից։
The unmistakable talent and voice and musical agility of Gor Mkhitaryan. Wasn't that beautiful? It's called Bashtbanir Mez, Protect Us. And it is dedicated to the situation in Armenia, but throughout the world. And you know what is equally as it's a beautiful song, equally as important is the video that goes with it. And so do check out today's show notes, because I'll put a link to the video. I spoke with Gor just, I think, the day that it came out or the day after it came out. And we were talking about it, and he shared with me the evolution of how the video came about the need for it in Armenia, about the ridiculous number of people that are walking around unprotected. And at the same time, in the video, you'll see the Prime Minister, Nikol Pashinyan, is passing out masks. So no sooner had he told me this that I think it was the following day, just the following morning, we woke up and Pashinyan had tweeted about Gor, congratulating and thanking him for putting out this video, putting out this song. And it was just beautiful. You know, it's beautiful that music can reach places that maybe words, actions cannot. Yeah, there's a secret language of music, and you all know that. It touches you in a unique way, and I think this one is going to make a big impact, if it hasn't already, you know. So, Gor Mkhitaryan, Bashtbanir Mez, Protect Us. Do check out the show notes, a link to the video, as well as all the wonderful music that Gor Mkhitaryan puts out. It's fantastic. Well, we began the first portion of today's next step with an interesting little proposition made by the Archbishop of Canterbury, saying that, you know, we have to rethink how we perceive Jesus. And yeah, it's interesting. We're rethinking everything. And I think it's wonderful that at least people are taking some time to ponder these ideas. But in reality, nobody really wants to find something new. What they really want to do is rediscover their old prejudices. Seriously, think about it for a moment. Think about what people are saying. Is there really a discussion? I mean, you know, one of the things that I enjoy after giving a sermon is not for people to come and pat me on the back, but to say, you know, I have an issue with that statement you made. That's part of debate. That's part of an intellectual exchange of ideas. But what's happening today is there's no basis for that. There's no exchange of ideas. There's no discussion. There's no debate. It's, you're an idiot. You're stupid. How stupid can you be? And it's disheartening. You know, it just takes you back to, well, to childhood. You remember, like, debating with friends? No, there was no debate when you were kids. You would just bring it down to the most elementary level, right? This is what I want. This is what you want. Do you like what I want? No, I don't. Well, then you're stupid. And then if you can't intellectualize with somebody, you get down to, well, you're goofy looking. You know, you're fat. You're ugly. You know, it's childish. And that's what the conversation has become. That's what the conversation where most people, in fact, I'd even say all people, right now just want to hear themselves. It's like, this is what I believe. And I'm not really interested in an exchange of ideas. This is what I believe. If you want to challenge me, then just get out of my way. Close it up. I'm hearing people who are doing this. I heard this guy on, I can't remember what it was. It was I can't remember if it was YouTube or someplace. Anyway, he's a guy who's predicting the future, and his basis is, you know, he's now at a point in his life, he says, where he now understands the book of Revelation, and so now he's going to explain it to us. And he says, I don't have time to explain to you how I got to this thing. You have to trust me. This is what I believe. Okay. Okay. I mean, end of discussion. There is no discussion at that point. It's just bizarre, right? It's bizarre that we put up with this. And we're just content. This is what it is. This is what I believe. You don't like it, turn the page, get lost, go to hell. That's it. Okay, well, at that point, we've lost civility. We've lost the ability to communicate. And so basically, we're just saying, like, this is what I believe. This is what it is. Now, who's been the worst offender of this? When you look at it, you realize that religion has played its role too. Not, I shouldn't even say it that way. Religion plays a role in this too. Yes. Like, do you ever wonder, like, why young people are turned off by the church? I mean, as far as I could remember, like, I've been in the church for like 45, 50 years, including the time when I was a deacon and working with young people. This has been the ultimate question. How come kids don't come to church? How come young people, young adults don't come to church? Well, you ever think about it? What are you as a young person? You're free thinking. You're somebody who's putting together your life and understanding. And the last thing you need is to find some place that's going to tell you, don't think, this is the way it is. You don't want that. I don't want that. You know, like check your brain in at the door and then come into church. Yeah, sure. The most valuable thing I have, my brain, I'm going to check it in and then come in like a nitwit and just listen to what you're going to tell me. I mean, like, who wants to do this? And the fairy tales that they tell you, instead of like tying it in, instead of taking these incredible stories of faith they just make it very vanilla, you know, just like two-dimensional, instead of adding that third dimension that it connects to your life, and then adding the fourth dimension of time that it pops out from the pages of the Bible, from the pages of the story. So Jesus is talking to you today. And we know that that's important. But somehow when it comes to church, we throw it to one side. I mean, in science, they said, okay, there's four dimensions, right? There's the three dimensions that we know about, that everything exists in, plus there is the dimension of time. So why aren't we implying this to the church, to the ministry that we're doing? The time in which we are living is very important. We live today. And to take these stories from the old times and try to cram them into today is not the way to go. We're living in today. So you take these stories from old time and you apply the lessons in those stories, not the story. It's a small little nuance, but this is where people get hung up. They get hung up on the stories rather than what these stories are out to teach. You know, I've shared with you one of my pet peeves is the Noah's Ark story. If you look at it on its just on a superficial basis, just read the story. It's horrible. Horrible. God says, you know, I'm going to wipe out the world because there's nobody good in it. What? What about the baby that was born yesterday? Nope, I'm sorry. Everybody's gone except Noah. Now, if you start looking at this literally, you're in trouble. You're really in trouble. Instead of understanding that there's a message in the story of Noah's Ark, it's a message about following the natural law of God, about obedience, about understanding that there are consequences to our actions. And I think all good stories that come out of the Bible are stories that allow a person to test his faith against the parameters that in which he lives. And in testing that, he becomes a better person. In testing that, she becomes somebody who's living the faith. Living the faith is living life and living it to the fullest. Yeah, it's important to think. It's important to recognize that you are a part of not a problem, but a solution. And so basically where we're at is, okay, are you ready? Here comes a new one. Okay, here's a new one. You want new ideas? Here it is. It's a call for a four-dimensional church. That's it. We've defined it just now. You want a church that talks to you? It has to have four dimensions. It's not just two-dimensional. It's not on a screen. It's not on a piece of paper. It's not on a plane. It's three-dimensional. It pops up. It pops up off of the screen, off of the piece of paper. It's three-dimensional, but it's also fourth-dimensional. That fourth dimension is time. It exists in time. Think about it like this. It's very easy, okay? Where are you right now? If you were going to tell your friend to meet you right now, okay? I'm going to tell my friend to meet me at the corner of Olympic and Brand Boulevard, okay? Intersection. I have given two dimensions, right? Two streets. One street is perpendicular to the other. So that person can go to Brand and can go to, what did I say, Olympic, okay? I don't know if this even exists in reality, okay? Olympic and Brand, you're right there. That's two dimensions. And on that corner, there is a high-rise building. So now I'm going to tell you to go to Olympic and Brand, and hey, friend, I want you to rise to the 7th floor. Ah. So it's not enough that that person is going to meet me at Olympic and Brand, two dimensions, but has to rise to the 7th floor. That's the third dimension, right? Going up. Going up. Length, width, height. We're going up three dimensions. But I haven't given my friend everything that he or she needs. There's one more factor, one more dimension that I have to add. Otherwise, that guy's going to be suspended in the infinite corridors of time. Yeah, I have to say, meet me at Olympic and Brand on the 7th floor at 10 o'clock today. Ah, okay. There's a time element. It's not tomorrow. It's not yesterday. It's not today at 6 o'clock. It's today at 10 o'clock. That's the fourth dimension. Now, we learn this. We understand this. We learn it in physics. We learn this in science. Why aren't we applying this to the church? You've got a message there that is so powerful. Jesus Christ is talking to us and telling us about a change in our lives where we can live our lives to the fullest. And it requires for us to take this message out of the first century. It requires us to take it out of Palestine. And requires us to adapt it to where we live today. Let's say Los Angeles for my sake. For your sake, you add in the city that you want to put in. Okay, there's your third dimension. And 2021. In the year of our Lord, 2021. Yeah, we'll be ready for next year, okay? We want to know how we're going to apply this for next year. Because 2020 is shot, okay? That's why I didn't go there. You get the idea. You have to add that fourth dimension. Fourth dimensional church. There it is. We've just now coined an idea. And I think this is really important. Because when we talk about church today, when you talk about faith today, it is such a turnoff. When you listen to the people and the way that they're approaching it, it's something like just out there. It's out there and, hey, you've got to come to it. No, faith should be part of you. Isn't that what Jesus Christ, the whole Jesus Christ experience is about? God left the comforts of heaven and came and mixed with us. He was with us, God with us, Emmanuel. That's the beauty of the gospel. That's why that gospel message resounds today and forever. Because it's a loving and caring and compassionate God who's inclusive and takes us all in, and he decides what happens to us. And so we leave him, we let him be God, and we try to work on our humanity. On being the best that we can be. I was shocked the other day when I read a small little blurb about a gentleman who's going to be pastoring a small little group. And I thought to myself, how bizarre is this? I mean, I read the wording in there. It's just like, yeah, we want this guy to come and teach and do this and that. And the guy claims to be Orthodox. And, you know, I am just like thinking, we have all of these little labels that we throw upon ourselves. Did you know that there's, I just learned this last night, by the way, 40,000 different denominations of Christianity. There's only one church, of course, but there's 40,000 different variations of Christianity. And we certainly know at least a few of them right now in our presence. Yeah, I said presence, not president. Yeah. President gives us a few too, right? I mean, it is bizarre like how people have taken claim to Christianity. Instead of letting Christ take claim to us, we've taken claim of Christianity. This is the way it is. This is what Jesus believes. This is what Jesus says. And I hear this all the time. This is what God believes. This is what God says to us. Relax, folks. Relax, let God be God. And I think that's a question of the time. Now, that being said, and I guess since I brought this up right now, let me say that this weekend happens to be the 4th of July weekend here in the United States. It's one of those very special times of the year because it is really the celebration of celebrations. We're celebrating the democracy that started back in 1776. And you know what? It isn't perfect. And it is gone for, what is that, 1776, quick math, 244 years. It's gone for 244 years. And it's not perfect. But at least there's an opportunity to share ideas. There's an opportunity to discuss. There's an opportunity to challenge. And that's what the democracy is. Through a system of checks and balances, through a system of dialogue, of debate. And so we are at a point right now where there is a threat to that dialogue. A threat because, not because of anybody trying to do it, except our willingness to give in, our willingness to just go with the flow. And I'll be honest with you, it's very difficult to go against the flow. Because they've created an atmosphere now where people don't want to fight it. But in this democracy called the United States of America, there is a wild opportunity to really push yourself, to really kind of take the basics of independence, of liberty, and use them to let your mind really, your mind, your body, your soul really flourish. And I think that's a very unique and God-given gift to us. When I think about every time that I say the Pledge of Allegiance, one nation under God, to me it's not that God's just sitting there, but that God is that ability for us to go ahead and think and create. You know, I came from one of the most creative parts of the entire planet Earth, Silicon Valley. And I lived there in the heyday of it. And I'll never forget, you know, just the excitement of that time because there were no boundaries, no restrictions. Go ahead, think and invent. And when you look throughout history, it's that attitude when people have been able to have that freedom to go ahead and think and invent that our greatest creations for this planet have taken place. Now, I know the United States of America, like I said, is not perfect. People criticize it, and some of it is rightly so. Some of it is a little overboard. But I know one thing. And this is a very cheap way to explain it, but I will. Because I've lived in Soviet Union, I've seen that, and I've lived through a lot of it. I'll tell you one little thing that really kind of is the one piece that I hate to play, but it's so, so true. And that's the idea that no one escapes this place. Instead, you just find people wanting to come in. And they will line up at the border. They will line up at the border and spend days. They will risk their life leaving countries to get to the United States of America. And that's something to be proud of. That's something when they talk about we don't want immigrants, it hurts me. Because this country is one of immigrants. It's like the beauty of a freedom. That to me is the most powerful message we can send out. And right now there is a threat. There is a threat. And that threat is because we're giving in. We're giving in to people who do not want to have a dialogue. People who want to take an authoritarian position. Jesus Christ, Son of God, came and he lived within us. A servant to all. He didn't have extra titles. He was Jesus. He wasn't his holiness. He wasn't a beatitude. He wasn't a grace. He wasn't a reverend. He was just Jesus. And sometimes when I read so much of what's going on, especially in the church, I think that we've lost that simplicity that Jesus Christ taught not only in his message, but through his life. When he knelt down and washed the feet of his disciples, he was giving us the greatest message there is of humility, which has as its consequence love. You want to give out pure love, you humble yourself. And to me, there is no other message that we need today. In other words, the fourth dimension, time, in this year, in this space-time where we're at right now, it's probably the greatest message that we need to hear. Humble yourself. Have humility. Understand you have something to learn. You have something to offer. But let there be a bit of humility so that you can be respected. And as you're respected, respect others. It's another way of saying the formula, do unto others as you want them to do unto you. It's another way of saying the formula, as you forgive, so shall you be forgiven. It's another way of saying the formula, to every action there is an opposite and equal reaction. And I leave you with that message, because it comes to us from science. It comes to us from physics. And I brought you there from the point of religion. And you see that it's all connected. Don't fool yourself when they say one is absolutely, you know, you don't need religion, you just need science. Don't fool yourself that when they say you just need religion, forget about science. No, it's all interconnected. Have that humility to open yourself up to the possibilities. Open yourself up to listen, to hear, and understand that there is a beauty all around us just waiting for us to humble ourselves. Really, that's it. To humble ourselves so that we could accept it. All right. Here's Susie with her announcement. I'll be back in a few moments. Got a lot to tell you, okay?
Here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world, and look forward to your continued support. Thank you, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. Thank you to all of you for listening, for sharing us, for those nice comments you sent us, and supporting us with your prayers, your thoughts, and your gifts. Listen, we have some big announcements taking place, and we actually just today released a press release. We are now officially a ministry of the Western Diocese of the Armenian Church, and we took this bold move, really, because we're concerned about the same thing we talked about today, about the ability for us to continue this vital outreach beyond ourselves, to prepare the next generation of people. Because we do feel that this is a vital outreach, especially from your comments, from your reactions. We know that we're reaching out there, we're touching people in a very unique manner, and you don't hear this too often. So, that being said, we are now part of the Western Diocese. You can read about it, but there'll be more coming out in the next few days because it's just all brand new. There's an initial press release. You'll find it in our show notes as well as everything we talked about today. A lot of stuff in the show notes, okay? That being said, let's see. I told you I was at Palm Springs last week for church services. And this Sunday, I will be at the Armenian Cathedral celebrating the Divine Liturgy. Have some exciting stuff with youth there. Yeah, very, very exciting. We're doing prayers. Now, you remember I shared with you last month that we were starting a streaming service of prayers every night. So 7:30 at night, you connect to our Facebook page at the diocese, and there will be a prayer offered. We've offered prayers for prisoners, for the lonely, for healthcare professionals, for the bereaved, for the elderly, for the unemployed, for the sick. Every night of the week, there was some special message going out. And we're continuing this month. But this month in July, we've asked young people from our diocese, if they would offer the prayers. Small little bit of guidance, here's the service and everything, but asking them for their words, for them to express their prayers. So you don't want to miss this. This is every day. And here's the good thing about it, if you can't make it, because I know it's 7:30 p.m. our time, which is Pacific time. I know many of you in the world are on different times, and now it's like middle of the night or very too early in the morning. The good thing about it is you don't have to watch it live. It's there. So just get on the Facebook page, Western Diocese of the Armenian Church, and just scroll up and down till you find the different services. There's one a day, and it's just beautiful to see these young people do it. Let's see, that's about it. So I want to thank you for joining us. It is a late night tonight. We got a very late start at the studio, but there's a lot of good things coming up. I need your prayers, especially right now. We're going through a lot. I told you a few weeks ago, we're reorganizing, we're restructuring this move that we made of uniting the Inishus with the Western Diocese, an important move, a very fundamental move to keep it within the church and our understanding of outreach as the manifestation of love as expressed by Jesus Christ. That's it. That's how easy it is. And that has to take place in anything that has the name Jesus Christ, namely the church. So we're doing it. And we're thankful to the Archbishop that he accepted us. And we're looking forward to a very fruitful relationship. There'll be more coming out, okay? If you'd like more, drop me a line, okay? The easy, easy address, it's feedback@epostle.net. That's apostle with an E. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic universe. Okay. Yeah, we brought the universe in there too. Listen, I'm going to call it a night. You could probably tell I'm pretty tired too. On behalf of the wonderful crew that put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Boskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.